You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, August 6, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show on this most ignominious of anniversaries. You realize today marks 70 years ago that the United States launched the world's only nuclear war attacks. That's right. 70 years ago today, the Enola Gay dropped the first nuclear bomb on the city of Hiroshima, Japan, or Hiroshima, Japan. I'm not exactly sure how it's pronounced. And that marked the beginning of the nuclear age, 70 years ago. Hard to believe, you know, thinking of my grandpa. He served in World War II in the Pacific. And, of course, thinking of Japanese Americans who in the United States were interned, including George Takei, the Star Trek actor. In fact, he was interned in Idaho, I believe, my home state. We had one of the internment camps there. And thinking of all the people, oh, my God, the devastation that was wrought by that nuclear weapon. Let's just pledge that shall be the only time. That and Nagasaki, let those be the asterisks in our history, and let us vow to never use these weapons ever again. Let's get them all rid from this planet. I mean, people ask me sometimes, oh, you fight for marijuana legalization. Isn't there something more important to fight for? Well, yeah, sure. And I want to get to that. Things like nuclear disarmament would be a good thing, I suppose. But I always figure if you can't solve marijuana legalization, that should be an easy no-brainer. Let me start with that. Let me see if I can get that taken care of, and then I'll move on to some of these big issues. On today's show, we've got all sorts of great stuff. If you are interested in the cannabis economy, we've got experts from the Cannabis Creative Conference, some more highlights that I recorded last Wednesday and Thursday. So tonight, you get to hear from Sue Harank. She's from MRM Systems, and she'll be talking about cannabis compliance in a one-on-one interview with me. And then we'll follow that with Bo Whitney, his keynote address on Thursday at that conference, last Thursday. And he is the one who wrote up many of the economic estimates for marijuana legalization here in the state of Oregon. So you get to hear his predictions about where the market's going here in the Beaver State. Also on the show today, we'll have time for a radical rant, kind of based off something that's in the news today. You'll hear it in the 420 radio news, but we got to ask the question, is the medical marijuana era over? Or is it time now for states to just step up to legalization? Or is there still room for medical marijuana activism in this country? We'll discuss the ins and outs of that in the radical rant. Also on the show today, we'll have a time to go behind the headlines where the New York Police Department commissioner, I think I mentioned this on a previous show, he is calling synthetic marijuana, you know, the synthetic cannabinoids, the spice, the K2, he's calling them weaponized marijuana. Weaponized marijuana. Okay, we'll address that and the other scaremongering around the synthetic cannabinoids. But first, we'll get to the 420 radio news. We've got news from the National Conference of State Legislatures. The Justice Department has been up to some shenanigans that Marijuana.com uncovered. We got a Michigan Supreme Court ruling, Florida medical marijuana, new data from Washington Recreational, and pesticide warnings here in Oregon. All that when we come back on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Expand your horizons and join us every Wednesday night for Gordon Green's Music Planet. You'll hear an eclectic mix of music from all around the world. Catch the first show of the month for an intro to world music. It's Gordon Green's Music Planet, Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, with replays weekends at midnight on 420radio.org.
The Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference is happening September 12th and 13th at the Hilton in downtown Portland. Hi, I'm Alex Rogers, and I hope you'll take advantage of this amazing opportunity to learn the latest business and legal information concerning cannabis commerce in Oregon in 2015 and beyond. Check out OMMBC.com right now for early bird pricing because we're likely to sell out. That's OMMBC.com, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Business Conference.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Replays of 420 Radio News are embeddable and shareable from our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Now, the marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, August 6, 2015. The National Conference of State Legislatures approved a resolution Thursday urging the federal government to allow states to determine their own marijuana policies. For a resolution to pass, it must be supported by a majority of participating legislators in each of 75% of the states represented at the conference's general business meeting. The preamble to the resolution, introduced by New Hampshire State Representative Rennie Cushing, notes that, quote, states are increasingly serving as laboratories for democracy by adopting a variety of policies regarding marijuana and hemp, end quote. And it highlights the fact that, quote, the federal government cannot force a state to criminalize cultivating, possessing, or distributing marijuana or hemp, whether for medical, recreational, industrial, or other uses, because doing so would constitute unconstitutional commandeering. Justice Department officials misinformed members of Congress about the effects of a medical marijuana amendment being considered by the U.S. House of Representatives, according to an internal memo obtained by Marijuana.com. The amendment, which lawmakers approved in May 2014 by a vote of 219 to 189, despite the Obama administration's objections, is aimed at preventing the Department of Justice from spending money to interfere with the implementation of state medical cannabis laws. But in the days leading up to the vote, department officials distributed informal talking points warning House members that the measure could, quote, in effect, limit or possibly eliminate the department's ability to enforce federal law in recreational marijuana cases as well, end quote, according to the document. The newly obtained memo, drafted by Patty Merkamp Stemler, chief of the Criminal Division's Appellate Section, admits that the talking points were, quote, intended to discourage passage of the rider, end quote, but do not, quote, reflect our current thinking, end quote. Prosecutors have dropped marijuana charges and will return items seized from a Michigan woman in the wake of a Michigan Supreme Court ruling last week. St. Clair County Prosecutor Michael Wendling said about 18 cases were on hold while prosecution and defense waited on the Supreme Court decision, and now at least 5 of those cases are affected. The Supreme Court ruling last week clarified when caregivers and users can use their medical marijuana certification as a defense or immunity if charged with a marijuana-related crime. Wendling said any unresolved civil forfeiture cases connected to those 5 dismissed cases also will be dismissed, and items seized will be returned. In February, police seized more than $24 million in assets from Michiganders in 2013. In many cases, the citizens were never charged but lost their property anyway. Petitions are already circulating in Florida to put medical marijuana on the 2016 ballot, and Senator Jeff Brandis will introduce a full-blown medical marijuana legislation within the next month, intended to undercut the initiative. But at a national conference in Seattle, the 2 states that have legalized recreational marijuana say Florida and other states should just bite the legalization bullet. Quote, Medical is just a step on the way to full recreational marijuana, end quote, Representative Dan Pabon said. But for Florida lawmakers in Seattle, the message is falling mostly on deaf ears. Quote, I'm not a big supporter of recreational use for marijuana, end quote, Senator Audrey Gibson said, continuing, quote, I obviously support medicinal use purposes and expanding what that looks like, end quote. Marijuana retail shops in the state of Washington reported $31.4 million in cannabis sales in July, down almost 6% from June, according to data from the state Liquor and Cannabis Board. Monthly sales had risen dramatically this year until July, more than doubling from January through June as the market hit its stride and more shops opened up. Despite the July dip, sales so far this year total around $170 million, putting the state on pace to surpass $300 million for the year. The total amount of excise tax due at the retail level rose by about $3.3 million after Washington State revised its tax structure at the start of last month. The Oregon Department of Agriculture said Wednesday it has drawn up a pesticide advisory, which the Oregon Health Authority is sending to registered medical marijuana growers around the state. The advisory says no pesticides have been specifically approved for use on marijuana, which is still illegal on a federal level, and the health and safety impacts on cannabis workers have not been evaluated. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, August 6, 2015. I'm Russ Belville.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com.
Despite strong public support for medical cannabis, decriminalization, and legalization in Georgia, the state spends $121 million every year to arrest, prosecute, and imprison Georgians for simple possession. Each year, the state of Georgia spends less on driver services, agriculture, and forestry combined. What else can $121 million a year do in Georgia? With that much money, the state could hire and keep 3,000 more teachers, improve roads and bridges, provide tax relief for small businesses, repair aging sewage systems, or lower taxes. But right now, that's millions of dollars of your tax money wasted on failed enforcement. Tell your representative you're tired of wasteful spending and ask them to end cannabis prohibition. Join the conversation at www.peachtreenormal.org. Peachtree Normal is a proud affiliate of Normal, the national organization for the reform of marijuana laws.
Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Today in Behind the Headlines, we get a very interesting headline from Vice News. Is the NYPD overstating the dangers of, quote, weaponized marijuana? I thought to myself, oh my goodness, somebody has found a way to weaponize marijuana, to get people stoned against their will from a distance. Some sort of blow dart gun, or maybe a ray, or perhaps a gas. Who knows? There's now a marijuana bomb, right? There's a marijuana death ray, right? No. No, this refers to a quote from the NYPD's commissioner of police, Bill Bratton, And it has to do with synthetic cannabinoids. The Spice, K2, Green Giant, whatever the hell they call it, where they take oregano or basil or some unknown herb and spray a bunch of synthetic THC on it. He's calling that weaponized marijuana. Weaponized marijuana. He says it gives users superhuman strength and immunity to pain. And at the news conference, he showed this video of people on, supposedly on Spice or K2 or whatever, synthetic THC. One man naked on all fours in the middle of the road, slapping the ground, and another naked man breaking through a fence with his body. Bratton said, quote, "These individuals, many of them under the influence of this drug, are totally crazy." Okay. Well, he continues, quote, "It looks like marijuana, but it's laced with chemicals. And as fast as we are able to identify the chemicals and get that particular chemical and make it against the law, they change the makeup of it. So it's synthetic and it's incredibly dangerous and harmful." End quote. Okay, so the first thing that we should address here is throughout our history, throughout the propaganda in the drug war, whenever there's some new drug craze, it's very common to say it makes these people completely crazy, it makes them superhuman strong, it makes them immune to pain, right? We heard this when it was crack. We heard this when it was ecstasy, when it was meth, when it was PCP, whatever the new scary drug is, it suddenly makes people turn into the Incredible Hulk, right? This is a great way for the police to justify some of the brutality they exercise against these people. But the facts are these. There are millions of people who have tried the synthetic THC, the K2, and let's be clear, I'm in no way endorsing the use of that crap. It is made for laboratory purposes. It's a super agonist to your endocannabinoid system. It's like THC turbocharged on steroids and loaded up on meth, okay? It's just heavy-duty shit. And since it's an illegal substance, there's no regulation as to how much is being put on or how even it was put on and so forth. So one bag to another bag might be completely different. Let's be clear that this is some bad stuff. And there has been an increase in people having adverse reactions to the stuff, and it can even lead to death. That aside, alcohol is going to lead to a whole lot more death. Tobacco is going to lead to a whole lot more death. And of all the people who have used this Spice or K2 stuff, there's a few handful that you can count that are the crazy running around naked doing psychotic stuff. And a lot of this ties back to, they talk about people in homeless situations, that there's kind of a spike in the use among the homeless. Well, part of that has to do, you got these people that sometimes live in places where there's drug testing involved, so they can't smoke pot. So they're going to turn to the stuff that doesn't turn up on the drug test, the Spice or the K2. And second of all, you're talking about a population that is likely to have a higher incidence of latent psychosis, of mental illness problems that then are exacerbated by this. So to think that this actually applies to the synthetic THC in and of itself or the population in general is really a heavy-duty dose of scaremongering from the NYPD. Now, of course, the obvious solution to this is to legalize the real natural thing and to end the drug testing for the real natural thing. The main reason people are turning to this is the real thing is too expensive and this is cheaper. And the real thing shows up on drug tests and these things don't. That's why people are making the choice to use this obviously more harmful, less predictable substance. If people could, they'd make the choice for the natural, easy substance of marijuana. And it's the illegality of trying to ban marijuana that then leads to the synthetic THC, which then gets banned, and then they tweak the molecule, and then that gets banned, and then they tweak the molecule, and you lead to more and more development of riskier, harmful cannabinoids on these things by making illegal every easy one they come up with until they have to come up with the craziest combinations. It's a never-ending, escalating arms race, if you will, between drug testing, legislation, and the illegal cannabinoids.
Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
Well, you're supposed to legalize the natural cannabis, you moron. How simple would this be to do? It's not a mystery anymore. We've got two states, four states now that have done it. The world hasn't come to an end. It's time to get over ourselves, people. It's time to do it for public health purposes for a million reasons that we will get to on future episodes of the Russ Belville Show. Happy 420, Denver!
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
You're listening to 420 Radio. Listen Sundays at 1 p.m. Pacific for Hemp Beach TV, podcasting at hempbeach.com. Skunk and his crew bring you the best festivals and events from all over the country in this weekly show, courtesy of Hemp Beach TV. Entertaining and lots of fun for the 420-friendly party crowd. Check our online listings for Hemp Beach TV with Skunk and the crew from hempbeach.com.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our Cannabis Community Chat.
Another highlight from the Cannabis Creative Conference.
Radical Russ here on the floor of the Cannabis Creative Conference in Portland, Oregon, at the Portland Expo Center, and we're joined here by a Coloradoan. It's Suzanne Harank. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Russ.
Okay, so what brings you to the Cannabis Creative Conference? What's your background in cannabis?
Sure. So my husband and I were owner-operators in the original days back in Pioneer of 2009 in Colorado. And we both have had medical reasons to use cannabis. And so we really wanted to enter the industry from an educational standpoint, as well as being entrepreneurs. We wanted to be able to also have a new business.
So 2009, that's basically the year when Colorado started really licensing dispensaries, right?
Correct, yes.
So you had a dispensary?
We did. We had a dispensary and cultivation facility, and we owned that for 3 years before Nick ran into a health issue and we had to get out. And we took care of him and then came back in and wanted to make a difference for our brothers and sisters, so we now have a compliance company.
Yeah, I see. You're with MRM Systems, and yes. So as a compliance company, I imagine your gig is making sure, before everybody tries to run the gauntlet of regulations, that they're ready to do so.
Absolutely. It's all about preparation and education. So if you're prepared and you've educated and trained your employees and your staff, then you're going to be in a much better position when the enforcement division comes to do their inspections.
So we're talking about Colorado, the Marijuana Enforcement Division, which used to be the Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division. And correct. Colorado's done this job where they've kind of merged, you know, they already had a well-regulated medical system and kind of just tacked recreational onto that. Mm-hmm. Oregon's doing things a little bit differently. Are you coming in here to the Oregon market and figuring what the differences are with that in Colorado?
Yes, actually our main goal coming to Oregon is to provide jobs and training as compliance specialists for Oregonians. We want to put Oregonians to work. And we want to put them in work in this compliance arena. And, you know, it's really important that facilities have their own compliance officer internally, as well as if they are going to have, they're going to hire an outside compliance consultant, make sure that they're certified and that they know what they're doing.
Absolutely. I know the rumor I heard is that the copy of the regulations in Colorado is thicker than a phone book, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's two books now,
wow.
Actually. Yep.
Now, do you see that much regulation happening in Oregon? I mean, it's still kind of early as far as what the regs are, right?
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, you know, they're using Colorado as an example and a baseline. And I just had a conversation with one of the OLCC commissioners this afternoon. And they really are looking at what did Colorado do well? What did they not do well? And I think that's really important. So there is definitely the rules and regulations for on the recreational adult use side is going to be very significant when it hits.
What lessons do you think Oregon should learn from Colorado?
Well, I think one of the things is to be prepared. You know, it's going to be difficult because the rules and regulations aren't going to be specified until they actually come out. So, you know, making sure that you're involved in the rulemaking process, that you go to the hearings, that you have your voice heard, that's going to be extremely important. So I think that's one of the things that a lot of people in Colorado may not have done on the upfront, and then had to deal with it on the back end.
So before getting involved in this sort of cannabis consulting and everything, what's your background? What sort of industry do you come from?
Sure. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 10 years old.
Oh, lemonade stand?
No, I actually had a recycling business and the wheelbarrow was bigger than I was.
Wow.
And then I, you know, I have over 30 years of operational executive management. I'm also a business coach and been an entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur since I was 10. So
and that's something, you know, just over the past 5 or 10 years, we're starting to see more people involved in this that come from non-cannabis related backgrounds, just business backgrounds, who recognize that this is an amazing opportunity, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like any other industry, and it's not. And we're still in our infant stage, and there's opportunity for everyone, and I've seen lots of success out there.
All right, well, let's get people in contact with you with MRM Systems. You want to get compliant, you want to make sure you're ready to go before the boards and the hearings and the inspections and the paperwork and spending all that money. Let's get it right. So how can they get in touch with you?
They can go to our website, mrmsystems.com, or they can call me directly at 303-475-1946. Love to talk to them.
All right. Sue, do you prefer Sue to Suzanne?
I do.
Sue,
sure.
Harank, thank you for joining us here, and welcome to Oregon.
You're welcome. My pleasure, Russ.
That interview with Sue Harank is available on the SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/radicalruss, as well as her 45-minute presentation on cannabis compliance. Lot of great information there. You get it absolutely free, soundcloud.com/radicalruss. Stay tuned. We got more from the Cannabis Creative Conference, a keynote address from Bo Whitney, a cannabis consultant and economist who did many of the economic modelings for the state of Oregon's legalization. You'll hear about his predictions for the Oregon cannabis market when we come back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Cannabusiness Chronicles.
Once again, back to the Cannabis Creative Conference from last Thursday.
Good morning. I'd like to start off by thanking Mary Lou for putting this all together. It's an incredible, well-orchestrated conference. And Greenpoint Oregon is a proud sponsor of this event as well. If you think back in the day, in your dorm room, you're passing the bong around, you're twisting up a couple of joints, who would have imagined that there would be an event of this nature with an economist up on the stage? So, and being an economist, I have a obligation to keep things as mundane as possible. So. But what this demonstrates is that it's a very dynamic industry, and there's a tremendous amount of opportunity, and things are progressing very quickly. So in today's presentation, I'm going to talk about a little bit about the background on my forecast, talk about what the total market is, the total opportunity, make some projections on a revenue forecast. Talk a little bit about tax and tax policy, because that plays a large, it contributes a lot to the price of the product and the conversion from black market to open market. And then I'll give some predictions of the future at a very high level, and then I'll take some questions at our Golden Extracts booth that we have. So in terms of developing a forecast, I began this journey about a year and a half ago. And a student in one of my economics classes came up to me and started asking questions, talking about the cannabis industry. And so I asked him, how big is this market? And he goes, well, you're the economist, you tell me, right? So it was strictly a intellectual exercise at that time. And I reached out to some economists and found that there was only a handful of them in the country, myself included, that was looking into this space. So I joined forces with the tax economist in Colorado. His name's Larson Silva. And he put together the initial forecast for the referendum in Colorado. And that really resonated with me. So I thought, well, I'll try to leverage his methodology so that when people ask to draw a comparison between the Oregon market and the Colorado market, then we'd have a basis, a similar basis to compare. I mirrored, as best I could, some of his assumptions. And at that time, there was just a few months of actual data associated with the forecast in Colorado. And so I made some adjustments to the Oregon model and then published that out in the run-up for Measure 91. I wanted to go over some of the assumptions as well. I know it's kind of the economic stuff, but bear with me. I use population and the percentage of usage within that population. In Oregon, it's a closed system, and so it's very easy to say how much of the population actually uses cannabis. And that's 12.9% according to some national studies and centers of disease control and stuff like that. And then I used an assumption on consumption, which was exact, the same assumptions as Colorado. And then looked at the bifurcation between the medical market and the recreational market. So once I pulled all that data together, added an assumption for what would the standard price per gram be, then I was able to easily just do the math and come up with a forecast, and I'll share that to you in just a second. I think the key item here is that the forecast I'm about to present is a very simple model, and then the discussion, such as with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission from yesterday, is let's talk about assumptions, not talk about the methodologies and all this. And so it's a good conversation to have. So currently, based upon my forecast, the total available market, now this is black market and open market combined, is about 520,000 users, 71,000 which are already established in the medical program, and then the rest, 445,000, are recreational users. And just for some perspective, that's, the medical users are about 1.8% of the total population in the state of Oregon. But what this represents is that the opportunity that recreational represents, it's essentially a 7 to 8 times the market that medical. So there's a tremendous opportunity here. In terms of dollars, In terms of dollars, the total revenue forecast, once again, for black market and open market combined, is about $581 million. And when I first did this analysis a year and a half ago, I was stunned. I had no idea just how mature and how large this market is. By comparison, the market in Colorado is between $700 and $1 billion. And essentially, the difference there is due to population. So, tremendous opportunity, $581 million. Then the question becomes, how much of a conversion from black market to open market will there be? And then how much of that market is available to all of us to invest in and to capture? Now, one thing to note is that since Oregon is a closed system, it's just Oregon, nothing can go to Washington or Idaho or New York or what have you, that doesn't necessarily represent the total opportunity that would be represented by Canna Tourism. So, for example, some of the largest dispensaries in the state of Washington are on the border of Oregon and Washington, because a lot of folks right now go up to Washington, purchase their goods, I assume they consume in Washington, right? So, when Oregon fully implements its recreational program, that's going to flip-flop, and so there'll be an increase of Canna Tourism here in Oregon. So there's another opportunity for increased revenues, increased profits. Now, what does $581 million mean in terms of pounds, in terms of the total demand? I pegged the total amount of demand at 115,000 pounds of cannabis, that being flower, trim, etc. It doesn't necessarily represent oils, for example, but that's just a very high level, 115,000 pounds. So, hang on. So the question then becomes, how much of an opportunity is there for the state to fleece us for all the tax money that they can get? But what I tried to do with the tax analysis was, I wanted to see what the lowest possible tax would be in order to generate the greatest amount of tax revenue. And my hypothesis was that if you lower the price to as close to the black market price as possible, then you'll get more of an incentive for people to go from black market to open market. And so I put together, being at Greenpoint, Oregon, it's a vertically integrated company with growing operations, extraction operations, retail and wholesale. Having that opportunity to have that visibility into the supply chain, I have unique access to a tremendous amount of data on demand and a lot of opportunity for the analytics. So based upon some of the retail statistics that we had available, I was able to calculate just how sensitive our consumers to price. And there's an economic theory called the elasticity of demand, which basically says, it essentially says that the lower the price, the greater the demand will be. And it also says that some products are more price sensitive than others. And so in this market, cannabis is extremely price sensitive. Cannabis consumers are extremely price sensitive. And so based upon the data that I had available to me, I was able to recommend to the legislature a range of taxation that would generate the greatest amount of revenue and compete with the black market. And that range that I proposed was 12.5% to 17.5%. And what ultimately happened, based upon a lot of inputs, not just mine, but the legislature was actually pretty savvy enough to take those recommendations and incorporate that into a sales tax. Now, in Oregon, a sales tax is unheard of. And the fact that cannabis now is a sales tax is the first time, or second time actually, in 106 years of tax policy in Oregon to actually have a sales tax. So now, in my chart here, in the blue, I took a look at the total market. And then in the red, I looked at the initial proposal by Measure 91, which is a weight-based tax. And a weight-based tax is actually somewhat punitive if you lower the price, because the tax is still there, it actually goes up. So that was another argument in favor for a sales tax. Now, and one other thing is that Oregon was the first in the country to actually use this type of analysis in order to shape their tax policy. When I talked to the economists in Colorado, talked to them in Washington, they just basically said, well, we just came up with some numbers, looked at how much money we could get, and set the policy in place. What they didn't take into consideration is if the tax is way too high, then there's not going to be as much conversion from the black market to open market. There's not that incentive. If you can get a cheaper price, you're going to go down to your friend on the corner and get your bag and pay the street market price. And so my objective was to try to keep that price as low as possible. Now, by comparison right now, and I think that also shaped some of the conversations in Washington, because the tax at that time, before this policy was put into place, the tax was actually about 45% to 50% in Washington. They did a graduated tax, and it just built off of each other, and it made prices extremely high. And it stifled the conversion from black market to open market. So now Washington has since taken that down to 37%. But if you see the chart that I've displayed here, that tax is still way too high relative to other states. 37% in Washington, 25% on the average in Colorado, and then Oregon's at 17%. So in this sense, Oregon has a competitive advantage over the other states. So once again, you'll probably see tax or canna tourism come into Oregon. Now, this is not a new concept. When the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, when the Washington Liquor Control Commission privatized, it drove liquor prices up way high in Washington. And what that did is it benefited Oregon liquor stores along the border. It benefited them to the tune of $10 million in additional revenue each year. So this is not rocket science by any means. So I've taken you through some of the demand, taken you through some of the tax policy recommendations, and so what does this all mean? Well, what this means is that contrary to some other economists in this space, there's still a tremendous entrepreneurial opportunity here in Oregon. There's a lot of money to be made, but that window is starting to close. It will close once the market matures. It's getting there. And once the market has an opportunity to normalize. And then there's going to naturally be consolidation in the market. Some people will just not be good business people, and so they should be, you know, droned out of the market. And that will just naturally occur. So, and what will determine the winners and the losers in this space is if they're sound business people and if they have an opportunity to differentiate. Right now, in this market structure, there's so many people out there that people are not quite sure, you know, what is the difference between this supplier and that supplier and that supplier. And it really comes down to differentiation. And so, you know, my recommendation to this audience is that if you can differentiate your product and you can develop best business practices, you'll be successful. And then, you know, I also believe that the first ones that can scale, if they can consolidate, scale, form partnerships, alliances, and really set the bar high, similar to what Greenpoint Oregon has done, then that will also create barriers to entry for others to follow. And it will help consolidate and grow the market. And so I think that at this point is about what I wanted to present in the time allotted to me. And so I wanted to thank you for your time, and I wish you the best of luck in this really exciting industry. So thank you.
Bo Whitney speaking to the Cannabis Creative Conference last Thursday. And again, he did many of the economic estimates for the state of Oregon. $500 million market he's talking about. It's a great time to be out here in the Pacific Northwest. We've got more coming up. The anti-drug public service announcement of the day, plus my radical rant asking, is the medical marijuana era over? Plus, we'll have hour two, Toker Talk Radio. We'll open up the phone lines at 84-420 Radio and discuss more stories of the day. I've got a new prohibitionist website that I've been chuckling over for the past 15 minutes. Got to tell you all about it. And we'll have our Groovin' Thursday Daily Toker Tune coming up at 4:20. So stick around. It's the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. The Russ Belville Show, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Smoking marijuana impairs your judgment. It's more harmful than we all thought.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
We had a story earlier in the 420 radio news about this National Conference of State Legislatures that was happening and how they were talking about medical marijuana in Florida. And the legislators from the Pacific Northwest, we had Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes was there, as well as others, saying that Florida ought to just bite the legalization bullet. Saying, quote, medical is just a step on the way to full recreational marijuana, end quote. And, of course, the Florida lawmakers in attendance aren't very supportive of that idea, saying, quote, I'm not a big supporter of recreational use for marijuana. This was Senator Audrey Gibson. I obviously support medicinal use purposes and expanding what that looks like. So it's an interesting thing because as medical marijuana began throughout the early 90s and the 2000s, that was one of the talking points by prohibitionists is, it's the camel's nose under the tent. You're just going to try to get this medical marijuana thing happening, and then you'll move straight on to legalization. That's just the opening salvo, right? And now, the first four states that have legalized marijuana for recreational purposes, indeed, are among the first four states that legalized it for medical purposes. So, for those prohibitionists, it's got to feel like, see, we told you, you legalize medical and the next thing you know, recreational comes along. So, in that circumstance, I always have to point out that it's kind of a strange fear from the prohibitionists. If we legalize medical use of marijuana, that will lead to recreational legalization. Well, why would that happen? Why would that happen? Because maybe when people are using it medicinally, their friends and family get to see a pot smoker or cannabis consumer, if you will, who is normal, who is functional, who is just like you and me. And then that convinces people marijuana is not such a bad thing. And then they're able to support legalizing it for recreational purposes. So really, your fear about medical leading to legalization is a tacit recognition of the bankruptcy of your own ideology. It's a recognition that the only way you can keep marijuana illegal is to keep people ignorant of it. Isn't that the basic logic of that? So I've always laughed at the whole camel's nose under the tent or the Trojan horse. I always say, look, if it was a Trojan horse, if medical marijuana was a Trojan horse, the Trojan horse was made of glass because all the people in the horse, if you remember the metaphor, right? All the people in the Trojan horse were unabashedly in support of recreational legalization. Almost all of them. Yeah, you got your Americans for Safe Access people who are, nope, we're just medical. We don't think about legalization at all. But if you talk to them, they agree that locking people up for recreational use of marijuana is stupid, right? And then, of course, all the other drug reform organizations that have supported medical marijuana are unabashedly in support of recreational legalization. So when you hear this state senator from Florida saying, I'm not a big supporter of recreational use of marijuana, I obviously support medicinal use purposes and expanding what that looks like. You have to pay attention to that last part right after that clause there, expanding what that looks like. Because for those people, these are the people who are convinced that, yes, marijuana has a medical purpose and some really sick and disabled people ought to be able to use it. But if they're not really sick and disabled, we need to lock them up. We need to fine them, ticket them, arrest them, whatever it might be. So for those people, the most important thing to them is that demarcation line between sick enough to protect, healthy enough to arrest. And for those people, it's in their in their agenda to craft the tightest, most regulated, most strict, most oversight they can in a medical marijuana law. This is the theory that I've been a proponent of for almost 5-6 years now, the Box Canyon theory, which is medical marijuana is a box canyon. By putting the word medical in front of it, you forced marijuana into this box canyon where it's trapped and just gets more and more constricted. And we've seen it in the development of medical marijuana in this country. We start with California, wide open. You can grow it, you can buy it, sell it, have it, whatever condition you got, great. Then the next few states, Oregon, Alaska, Washington, Colorado. Oh, no, we got to have a list of things that you might have. You have to qualify under this list of things, and you got to register with the state, except Washington. You got to register with the state. We got to keep track of you. And then the next few states that come out were, oh, well, you know, we can't let you grow your own plants. Oh, no, about 2010 when we started having Arizona and Massachusetts and those guys coming on. No, we can't let you grow your own plants because then that gets loose and becomes recreational. So we're going to grow the plants for you and sell them to you at dispensaries. And now even that's gotten restricted. New York, Minnesota, Louisiana. We're going to grow the plants and then process them for you into non-plant marijuana things, extracts, edibles, whatever they might be, because we can't let the flower get out because that leads to the recreational marijuana. You get my drift? Medical has to get more and more and more and more and more restrictive in the effort of these legislatures to avoid it moving on into the recreational marijuana that they hate so badly. And so when you hear these Washington state officials telling them bite the bullet and move ahead to full recreational marijuana, it's almost a recognition from their point of view that there's inevitability to this, that, you know, legalization's happening. But that inevitability is not seen by the people in the South and the people on the East Coast generally. They don't see it as inevitable. They see ways, they're still in that mode of thinking it can be kept separate, that there's actually two separate things, medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. And what they all ignore is the fact that marijuana is marijuana. The reason why somebody's using it does not change what it is. If I'm standing in a circle with a Rastafarian and a multiple sclerosis patient, and we pass a joint between each other, it's still the same joint. Now, the MS patient's alleviating pain and spasticity. The Rastafarian is communing with Jah. I'm getting a little high, but it's still the same marijuana. So you can't corral it into a just medical situation or a just religious use situation. It can't be corralled that way because it's the same product. Until you get to the ultimate box canyon, which is the CBD-only legislation. There they truly came up with a medical marijuana that will not progress to recreational. Nobody gets high off CBD. So I am in agreement philosophically with these Washington legislators that there's an inevitability to marijuana legalization, not just because it's becoming more popular, but just because of the nature of life, the nature of the plant. It's a weed. It's going to overgrow. And now that four states have legalized and California's on deck, all of the scaremongering tactics go away. Now all that's left is cultural bigotry. And that cultural bigotry fades with every older person who passes on and every younger person who comes up. You realize 21-year-olds in this country can never remember a time when there wasn't medical use of marijuana? I got two nieces. One's 21, one's 18. They can't remember a time when there wasn't medical marijuana, favorable portrayals of gay people on television, the internet, cell phones, right? It's a different generation coming up that you can't bamboozle with your reefer madness talking points. They've got the Google. They'll look that shit up. They'll realize you're full of it. And as those older culture warriors die off, it is inevitable. Florida will find out sooner rather than later. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for live Hour 2 here on 420radio.org. For everyone here in legal Potland, Oregon, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.